Welcome to the CCT8 Wake Up Call. My name is Bob Griswold. I just want to welcome to you to and ask you to support our sponsors, ask you to just pay attention. We're going to call this a timeless radio show for some reason.
Mary Griswold.
Alan Harrop.
Kim Fink.
Rainer James.
Hal James.
Glenn Fink.
Mary,
we're going to be talking today about the impact of government regulations on small business and also on private individuals like landlords and things like that. And we have some stories to share. And we're going to start out with Helen Rayner, who owned a number of small businesses in Virginia.
Over the years, yeah.
Yep. We had what's called Fredericksburg Insurance and Financial Planning Service. It was in an old house, a beautiful old house, and we had sold a lot of pensions and profit-sharing plans and helped professionals, doctors, lawyers, various dentists, any professional set up a pension and profit-sharing plans. And the trick to setting it up, and the reason for setting it up, was it would save a lot of income tax for the people who owned the business. And, of course, they had to include their employees, so it was also a benefit to the employees. But the major benefit was the tax savings. And we had a ruling from the IRS that this was a okay way to proceed in business. But they changed their minds. I don't know. Inexplicably, they just changed their minds, and they descended us on one day and put us out of business. They said that was no longer an approved way to proceed. They reversed all the decisions concerning pensions and profit sharing plans. So in that case, it was a tax situation, and it was the tax people that changed the rules, and we lost a lot of business, a lot of customers, and a lot of money on it. Rainer, you want to comment on something?
Sure. We were among the early financial planners. We didn't know what to call it to begin with. And we got together with some other people who were doing similar things, and in 1974 helped form the International Association for Financial Planning, DC Metro Chapter. And in that organization, we met some of the brightest entrepreneurs and most creative people I've ever known. And we saw them attacked by a regulatory agency, right, left, and sideways. There were a couple guys, Denny and Randy Smith. Denny had been the adjutant general for AG. What am I trying to say?
Attorney General
for the state of Idaho. They had gotten a private letter ruling from IRS in writing that the annuity that they designed, which allowed people to bypass some of the more expensive procedures and put their money in a tax-sheltered annuity that they directed the investments during its growth period and was only taxed when they began to draw it out to the extent it was new money, not the money they put in, but okay. A lot of us in the IAFP sold their products because they were really good tools. Then the IRS, about 5 years in, reversed itself, said, no, it's going to be taxed as you buy and sell
the internal transactions in the fund.
Before they were drawing anything out, yes. And so they fought it in court. They fought it and fought it and fought it. They won. But winning meant it put them in bankruptcy because it took all the money they had could scrape together to get that thing done. There are companies, the last time I knew, doing exactly what they did, but Denny and Randy, I'm sure they, cream always rises to the top. I'm sure they bounced back, but we don't have contact with them now. Another member of IFP was a very charming, elegant woman. She was Jewish. She was from a long family of gem cutters. including down through her father. She grew up watching that happen, knew a whole lot about gemstones. And so what she did was sold people investments that were uncut stones that were as close to flawless as she could find, and then conferred with the people who were going to cut it about how to cut it in such a way that it added value, it was made the best of what was available. So it added value, and it was darn consistent. She convinced me that uncut diamonds are a girl's best friend if she wants an increasing asset. But I don't think they ever took her down. But by George, they tried time after time after time. She was investigated. It just... very frustrating. The government isn't our helper. The government is our enemy, big time.
Would you say that the biggest obstacle to the American dream is the American government?
Amen.
Amen.
Or
I'd like
amen.
To describe another time that we ran into problems with the regulations of the federal government, particularly. My commanding officer in the National Guard, a captain, company commander, he and his brother owned a small bus company. Well, he told me one time that he had arranged to sell the bus company. And I was disappointed. And I said, Alvin, let me see the terms of the contract that you're going to enter into. And he showed it to me. And I said, you know what? You're giving them. They can take the operation funds that come from operating the bus and pay you for it in about 10 years. And then they'd own the bus company. You're practically giving it to them. I don't think you should do that, Alvin. He said, would you want to do it? And I said, yes, I'd want to do it. So, oh boy, Rain and I entered into another business we knew absolutely nothing about, transportation. But we built the business. We convinced some of our family and friends and other clients and other businesses to invest in it with us and actually bought the controlling interest in that bus company. And things went along really, really well for about 3 or 4 years, and we made a great profit out of it, and we were distributing profits to the people who had invested in it. And then one time a guy shows up and says that they're shutting our business down, and I said, what the world's going on? He said, well, we've changed the regulations in such a way that your operating rights are no longer of any value to them. Anybody can operate on your lines that wants to. Well, that changed our business 180 degrees. No way in the world. That meant that anybody that wanted to leave Colonial Transit and buy a little bus somewhere and run on over our routes could do that. What do you want to say about that, huh?
Well, I just wanted to interject that the operating rights had been carried on the balance sheet as worth a couple million dollars. Well, when the deregulation was sudden, deregulation was the right thing to do, but the way it was done killed businesses. We had a $750,000 rolling line of credit for buying rolling stock buses.
National Bank of Washington.
Yeah. And so they called the loan, which meant we had to sell buses, which shrunk the operation. The faster we go, the behinder we get.
That happened right at the time we were actually expanding. That we were planning to do another bus terminal up in Dulles International Airport. Had bought the property to do that, and then we ran into all these problems, and it was terrible.
And it wasn't just us.
No,
Eastern Airlines went down.
The Greyhound Bus Company. Everybody involved in transportation was.
Took it on the chin.
Yeah, was hurt by that, and hurt really, really badly.
And one of the really strangest things about it was the IRS insisted that we stay in business for a whole year afterwards. Hal had to take them cash, $5,000 cash, every week for a year before they'd let us completely liquidate that company.
I take you to the office up there in I can't think of the name of it, a five-story building. I go up in the elevator,
Tyson's Corner,
and hand them the money once a week. They had to do that for a year before they'd let us declare bankruptcy.
What was the stated reason for the government regulation to come in to shut down these businesses? What was the purpose? Were they saying you had a monopoly? Or because it sounds like they just wanted a piece of your pie.
They allowed people to have a corner on the market of certain operating rights.
That's what FedEx does now. They sell their routes.
Yeah. Well, it was like that with a lot of other businesses for a long time. And I really was in favor of deregulation. The government's got no, it needs to be free market. They don't need to be.
But why? Why did they say
that? I have no idea. It was, Kim, this is going to sound ridiculous, but I honestly think the mentality of some of those bureaucrats is, I am in control here. You needn't think you're controlling your life.
Now, when you talk about the change in regulations, were these done through a legislature, or were they just done through some?
Well, no. You see, they had issued operating rights to, because they knew that if a company did not have operating rights, that they wouldn't be able to build a big company and actually provide the service to the people that needed it. Transportation for work in, from Arlington or from Fairfax or somewhere into D.C. is an example. That was one of our favorite routes. Well, same thing with airlines. They had airlines had specific rights. You know, they could go from one city to the other city, and they had a monopoly on that. They were the only ones allowed to do that because otherwise,
it would be more than one, but yeah, limited.
Limited, right. So then they decided, they being, what's the name of the agency, Rain?
The bureaucrats.
Yeah, anyway, decided to do away with that. So anybody could run on any route in the United States without any penalty. So what basically happened was people left Colonial Transit and took a, and bought a bus somewhere and started running over the same route that they had run for Colonial Transit and put the money in their own pockets. So that's what literally happened. And like I said, it couldn't have happened at a worse time, right when we were trying to expand and get another big business going up in Arlington, up in the Dulles International Airport. And you know, it got to the point, like Raina said, I had to take money up for a year to the people, and then there was a lawyer that was on our backs about something, I've forgotten what. Anyway, this lawyer called and he said I needed to come up and go back through Colonial Transit's books. We still had the books, and so we could see what we spent money on, where we collected money from and who and things like that. And I told Rainer we were going to go to the mountains and just forget everything for about 2 weeks. But he said, no, you got to come up here and talk to me again. And then Rainer let out a blood-curdling scream. And I said, did you hear that? And he said, of course I heard that. And I said, well, I'll see you in 2 weeks. And we left.
Went backpacking.
Folks, on that note, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Thank you for staying with us. This is the CCT8 Wake Up Call Show.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
The God and Country Christian Alliance has a simple mission, but it is a profound one. They want to inform and educate the public on issues of moral and political concern. They want to restore the Judeo-Christian values upon which this nation was founded to all levels of government. And they want to encourage and activate pro-family voters. Simple, but not easy. The God and Country Christian Alliance meets the third Monday of every month at Moore's Barbecue on MLK in New Bern. Meetings begin promptly at 7 p.m. and end by 8:30. To enjoy dinner with the group before the meeting, arrive between 6 and 6:30. Both the food and the company are good. Meetings include speakers and discussion, and their annual banquets are legendary. Join them on the third Monday of each month for a refreshingly candid view of the world and our place in it.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? They're people like you, a photographer, someone that ran their own business, someone retired from the military, just people in the community that love this country and have a desire to do their part to lower taxes and shrink government, to protect individual liberty, and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. We welcome you to come out to a meeting. If you like what you see and hear, there's a place where you can contribute to the cause. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. The group meets every third Tuesday at Stanley Hall Ballroom in downtown New Bern to enjoy a fantastic speaker and report on CCTA activity since the last meeting. If you've been disappointed with rising taxes and government intrusion, don't just complain. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Welcome back. Thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Alan, you wanted to add something.
Yeah, I have two examples of things a little bit different than what Hal and Raina went through. About 20 years ago now, my wife and I bought a 55-acre farm up north of Raleigh. And what we were going to do was put up fences and set up pastures and that kind of stuff. Of course, our youngest daughter was into horseback riding at the time. Never having done any of that stuff, being a city boy, it was going to be an adventure, and it was, and we enjoyed it. But we didn't realize the potential problems you could have with regulations. So we went in there, and we started mapping out places where we were going to put our barn, and we were going to put the fences up. And we happened to have, on this 55 acres, we had two streams that went through the property. And what we found out pretty quickly was that the Environmental Protection Agency, I guess it's them, requires that you have a buffer from that stream that extends into your property.
The wetland buffer.
And, yeah, it was like 100 feet or something. I believe it was 100 feet, which is quite a bit. Now, you know, if you had a small little stream or something, 100 feet might not mean a lot to 55 acres. But when you have two streams going through, both of which you got to have 100 feet on both sides of those streams, it amounted about 30 to 35% of the land we could not have used.
Good.
Wow. So we were fortunate. We went and investigated it, and we found out that the previous owner he was running a farming operation, not exactly what we were going to do. But as a result of that, we were grandfathered in. That property was grandfathered in. Yeah. So we did not have to comply with that. But if it had not been for that, which we, again, being naive and not having owned property like that, we weren't aware of those regulations. So, you know, the lesson in all this is that when you're getting into something new, you better make sure you understand all the regulations. Mm. Because you can find yourself buying something, then you think you can do something with, you find out you can't.
When we were up in Massachusetts, and I remember that was it Project 21 or whether Agenda 21. Okay. And the EPA was very, quote, cooperative with the Agenda 21. There was a situation that we were made aware of that after a rainy day or a rainy spell or whatever else, some EPA representatives would go around and find property that had puddles on it. By the way, down here, we've got plenty of puddles. But that had puddles on the property, and they would declare that a wetland, or they would declare that because they found a certain type of fauna or whatever else, that it was declared a wetland. Yeah. And all of a sudden, as you said, you need to have this area around that. You were not allowed to do anything. And this was based on a puddle. Well, the final solution, as silly as it sounds, was everybody had to post a private property, no trespassing sign, so that if the EPA came on the property, they were doing something illegal, so they couldn't use that as evidence.
Yeah. When I was stationed at the Pentagon, we had an environmental branch, of course, for construction. And it affected most all of the training bases, you know, like Fort Bragg, Fort Knox, all these training areas. They had to comply with all these environmental regulations, and it suddenly shut down a lot of them. They just couldn't operate very well. They couldn't serve the military in their required training environment because the environmentalists shut them down. And it actually happened, and I was there when it took place.
And there are projects, Hal, that were completed 30, 40 years ago that you can't even do now. For example, I live in Fairfield Harbor. Fairfield Harbor consists of a number of canals and an inner harbor, a nice place to keep boats and everything okay. Mm-hmm. It was originally a swamp, just a low-lying area. So the people who bought it up, this was in the 70s, they went in and they dredged it out and took the soil out of the canals and built up on the edges and everything. Everything was fine. You couldn't do that now for love and no money. They just, you know, the restrictions now are difficult to deal with that a lot of these things are just impossible now. Yeah. Like I read one time, this is just a little offside. It took 18 months to build the Empire State Building. 18 months. You couldn't get half the permits done in 18 months now. It would take you 3 or 4 years just to go through the permitting process.
That's ludicrous. We're being controlled by our government, and that is just A, backwards.
Two things. First of all, these are not laws. These are regulations.
Correct.
They're not made by our elected officials. We can't unelect the people making these laws because we didn't elect them.
You're talking about the deep state, we call it. Yeah. And that's a bunch of people that are GS-15s and things like that that would work permanently there. And I saw that again at the Pentagon. When I went up there, it was for a four-year tour. When my four-year tour was up, I was out of there. But the civilian that ran that branch was there forever. He was there as long as he wanted to. He was there.
And he had his own little fiefdom.
Absolutely.
Hal, as you're saying that, no matter who we elect into a position, they're gone in 2 or 4 years or whatever else, but that civil servant or whatever else is still there, right, in that same position and still doing the same regulations.
What do you think of term limits for bureaucrats?
I like it.
Well, I think we need
U.S. The U.S. Supreme Court this past session, past term, they actually overturned these law that allowed this, and they said that basically these federal agencies, this was a federal law, but a requirement, were overstepping their bounds, and that if these regulations wanted to be put in place, they had to go through Congress. There had to be a law enacted, and if that is the Chevron, you're right, yeah, his name's Chevron, and if, hopefully that will allow some, you know, reining in some of these regulators. And, you know, when Trump came in office, remember what he said. For every new regulation that a federal agency puts out, you've got to take two away.
That's great.
But of course, the current Biden administration is probably the opposite. You know, for every one they take away, they put two or three more new ones.
The other thing that I wanted to mention when Bob was talking about Agenda 21, which I think 2021, which I think has been moved now to 2030, I'm not sure. The goal was to get everybody out of the country into clustered living in the city. Mm-hmm. Yes. So we wouldn't need transportation. We'd walk everywhere, et cetera, et cetera.
Sustainable.
And we would be more controlled.
Nasty word, that.
Sustainable is a polite word for controlled. One of the things that we saw with that, there was a farmer out in western Massachusetts whose farmhouse was a couple of miles way back from the road.
Well, actually half a mile or whatever else, yeah.
Okay, and his septic tank went. So logically, you've got to put in a sewer because under Title IX in Massachusetts, you cannot replace a septic tank.
Oh, good.
You have to put in a sewer. So not only did he have to pay for the half mile to get to the road for the sewer, there was no sewer going by on that road. And what they did, what they aimed to do, and I don't remember whether they were successful, essentially was to drive him off his farm because he could not comply. Now, when we moved here, our house had a septic tank or something. I don't remember what.
Yeah,
we could not sell our house with the septic tank. Now, we were very fortunate because somebody had built a house two doors down, and they had put a sewer line going down the street.
Ah.
And we were like 50 feet from the street, so we just, you know,
we hit the mini lottery, yes.
And so we were able to do that. But had that sewer line not gone down the street, we would have been up a creek.
Gosh. You know, we've been talking about land issues, and it's not just land issues, because if we look at the regulations that they put on the commercial fishermen around here, understanding one of the NC Fish is a sponsor of the show, but I'm not going after the sponsor. I'm going after the federal regulations that are just ruining the ability for commercial fishermen to make a living.
And not only that, provide us with good seafood.
Yeah, we don't all fish.
Yeah.
And it enables a large portion of our population to have access to fish and crustaceans and whatnot that we would not have access to any other way.
And, you know, you talk about impacting people's ability to make a living. If you recall, several months ago, we had a local ophthalmologist on the show who was trying to resist the certificate of need requirements.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And whereas a healthcare or medical provider, you have to meet these regulations, and some bureaucrat decides whether this is sufficient need, instead of you
taking a chance
up your
on the
business,
marketplace.
And you find out if there's not enough need, you close down. I mean, you're not going to make some bureaucrat has to dictate it. And I believe that went to the state Supreme Court. I'm not
it's
sure
still,
whether.
It's still in the court.
It still hasn't been resolved, you know.
And they've actually added another testimony to the case itself.
You know, interestingly enough, Rainer and I had a good friend who worked at the state level where some of these regulations are formatted. And she said to us, and she thought she was bragging, we didn't like what she had to say, and she said, the regulations that I write have the force of law.
Yeah, she was.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
I would be curious what that force of law is, because it seems like the regulations that we have had passed that have been in our favor are not enforced, i.e. cursive writing, i.e. the civics founding principles in the high school. There's no consequence for disobeying the law. So maybe they have the force of law behind it, but there's no teeth in it.
Well, you're talking about legislation versus regulation. That should have the most teeth.
Well, I was talking about the certificate of need thing that Alan brought up. And the certificate of need is hurting a lot of doctors around here.
Not only that, but their patients. It's much cheaper when they do it their way. If they take a business chance on, there is this strong need, I've seen these indicators, I'm going to step out here and provide it.
And that's incredible, too, because if you look at just surgeons in general or surgery, if you go to the surgery center for an outpatient process, just to use the facility is like $20,000. And then you've got the doctor on top of it. But just the facility use fee that, say, like Dr. Singleton wouldn't have if he did procedures in his office.
I want to go back a little ways, because it was like 2-1 that to reduce regulation. I think now what's being proposed by Trump is a 10-1.
Ten
regulations
well,
get
he,
shut
he
down.
He found out how really bad it was.
I mean, I think he was adjusting for Biden's additions.
Folks, we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Thank you again for staying with the CCTA Wake Up Call Show.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swanspur, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
County Compass is a rapidly growing, free, weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news. Coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
Welcome back, and thank you again for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Mary, you wanted to add something about...
Yes, we've been talking about regulations, and we did mention some of the regulations that have really crippled some of our local fishing industry. And I guess the question I have, or the thing I don't understand, is we've got all these regulations that are supposed to protect the fish, and meanwhile, we've seen an amazing increase in the deaths of whales and dolphins because of the windmills they're putting in offshore.
Now, you're talking in the New England area, especially.
New England and New Jersey, off the northern east coast. They haven't successfully, as far as I know, started doing that in North Carolina, and I'm hoping they won't.
Well, I've seen a whole lot of those windmills when we travel up to Virginia. If you go along the coastline to get up there, you see a lot of those windmills up there.
Are they on land or are they in the ocean?
They're in land.
But the ones that are on land, or I'm sorry, the ones in the ocean have been the ones that they're saying the low-frequency vibration interferes with the sonar of the whales and the dolphins.
When they're putting in the footing, and they're doing pile driving in the footings, apparently it's disorienting.
And that's why
a
we're getting vibration.
Well, even the ones on land are killing an awful lot of birds.
Well, I know there was one that was put in Massachusetts, and I think it was Plymouth, but I'm not sure. It was one of the towns out by Cape Cod, and it was one of the more liberal towns, and they were going to be wonderful, and they were going to put in this windmill. Within a year, they took it down because the people living within a mile of it, because, the low-frequency vibrations were getting migraine headaches, they weren't sleeping at night, and they felt that the windmill was responsible for this. So, you know, we may think we have the answer with green energy, but the wind doesn't blow 100% of the time.
Far from it, and our grids are under threat.
And the blades have a limited lifespan. We had one break up in the ocean in Massachusetts, which caused all kinds of problems on Nantucket and Block Island and some of the Massachusetts beaches. And they said that the fiberglass got into the mussels, the fish, the mussel, or whatever they are.
Crustaceans.
And that people eating those were going to introduce fiberglass into their systems, which was a carcinogen. Mm-hmm. So we're doing all this stuff that we think is wonderful, but we're not looking out for the side effects.
I think the problem is they're not being honest in evaluating it. Their real purpose is to control we the people. They're not admitting to that. And so they get into all kinds of ridiculous situations that we should never have to go through.
Well, you know, it's just like you say, Irina, the left has their agenda, and they're going to use whatever tools they have access to. One of the things that's really impacting everybody, that's been going on for a number of years, is the regulations they put on motor vehicles, emission requirements.
Yep.
It keeps going up and up and up. What they have to, the emission standards getting stricter and stricter,
yes,
which is causing vehicles to get more and more expensive. And their plan is not to, they don't necessarily have to come outright and say, we're banning fossil fuel or gasoline-powered engines. All they have to do is say the standard, they set the standard so high, it can't be met.
Yeah.
So what happens is then the manufacturers are forced to go to hybrids, which a lot of them are doing now. Toyota, for example, a lot of their vehicles are offered hybrid. I'm not necessarily in favor of postal. It's an option, but it's being mandated.
Yeah,
that's my point.
Yeah.
And it also contributes to the cost of everything. It's like that example I think I've given before with my diesel truck. They have this mandate. You've got to have this diesel exhaust fluid in your vehicle. If something goes wrong with that diesel exhaust fluid system, your truck shuts down. And it can't drive more than 5 miles an hour. So you could be riding along on the highway. Something goes wrong with that system. If you don't get it, they give you like 30 miles or 60 miles. You have to get it repaired. If you can't get it repaired, you're out of luck. You're stuck out there in nowhere's land.
Yep.
And, you know, they don't tell you that when you buy the vehicle. Oh, yeah, by the way, you know, we got this requirement. So you find out when you have a system problem.
And it wasn't a nickel or dime repair, right?
It's $3,000 to get it repaired.
And I would just say these environmentalists only look at what they're trying to make better. They don't look at the counter side of it, which is what do you do with the batteries? How do you recover farmland that's got solar panels? What do you do with the bad, you know, the solar panels that go bad? They don't look at the downstream impacts of the environment because that's not their mission. And it's got to be primarily money versus environmental improvement.
Well, there's a lot of people making money on these solar farms and these wind farms, like Governor Cooper and his brother. They bought 1,500 acres of land north of Rocky Mount, and they're building these big solar panel farms. And, you know, so there's people capitalizing on it, just like you said. Follow the money and you'll see where it's going. The sad part about it, there's no demonstrated scientific evidence that CO2 emissions is altering the climate one iota.
Actually,
no evidence.
Actually, I read an article you wrote, as a matter of fact, in which you said that the optimum CO2 for plant growth,
right,
we are under that now, and that's a bad thing. And it's not only not good, it's actively bad.
Yes.
There are two things that I just want to add about this wonderful idea of electric vehicles. There was a report last week that said because of the weight of electric vehicles, the guardrails do not work for electric vehicles.
And most bridges need to be rebuilt to handle trucks that are powered by battery.
And the other
battery.
One is, don't try to escape a hurricane if you're near the ocean in an electric vehicle, because the salt water will set the thing on fire.
Oh, lovely.
This is not a comforting thing.
And since we've talked about climate change, there's an article today in Coffee and COVID. It's a blog by Jeff Childress. He's an attorney. And it's quite humorous as well as factual. But he reported a year ago about an undersea volcano on the Hungatonga, Hunga Tonga. The Hunga Tonga undersea volcanic eruption that is the greatest scientific climate event in modern history, but we've never heard of it because of our useless media. But included in the story is evidence about this overheated water, meaning that this huge, massive underwater eruption in the South Pacific boiled off literally millions of gallons of water, measurably increasing the water vapor rates worldwide. And when there's water in the air, it's the humidity, it creates heat. So his point is that in 2023 and our record hot summer needs to also to be linked to the humidity and the vapor in the air worldwide. And also with the extensive rain that we're having now is also indicative of if this water evaporated into the air, it's got to come back down. And I would recommend anybody to look up that Hunga Tonga volcano because I find it fascinating.
I remember the year, and I don't remember what year it was, that Mount Pinatubo erupted in the Philippines. Now, we were living in New England at that time, and we didn't really have summer. Our highest temperature, I think, that summer was maybe 83, 84 degrees. Mm. And it was cloudy and gray and wet and miserable all summer. And it was because of the amount of ash that that thing had sent into the atmosphere.
That the atmosphere was still carrying, yeah.
And, I mean, I hate to say this and I hate to mess up anybody's ego, but we're not big enough to change the climate. We're just not important enough. The Earth has been in cycles since forever, and we're little ants in the cosmos of whatever, and we don't, I mean, I'm not against clean water, I'm not against clean air, but we have to realize we're not in charge.
But unfortunately, Mary, a lot of the younger people in our society, they are firm believers that man is causing climate change. And unfortunately, they're easily, because that's what they hear in school. That's what they're exposed to. And they don't get an alternative. We tried to get something before the Craven County Board of Education about a year ago that would require that alternative explanations of climate change, more natural occurring causes, that they'd be taught in the schools. What happened to it? Dead on arrival, DOA. Nothing's been done. So they get one side of the story, and then they come in and they're all afraid, well, the world's going to end in 12 years and all the stuff they hear. And if that's what they're exposed to, that's what they're going to believe.
Well, the thing that kind of sets me back when someone tells me we're all going to burn up and go away in 5 years is the fact that the geologists in Greenland have found plant fossils under the ice sheet. So I don't know whether the Middle Ages had a lot of SUVs. I kind of doubt it.
It was those dinosaurs extinguishing their CO2 out their back ends, right?
But, I mean, obviously the cycles have changed. There was a period of global warming during the Middle Ages.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's how we had glaciers. I mean, why did we have glaciers? How did we get the Grand Canyon if there wasn't climate change?
Yeah, that's another one. But I mean, that's, you talk about glaciers. You couldn't dig a half inch anywhere in New England without encountering a rock. I haven't found a rock since we've been here. I mean, we dug one out when we got rid of our swimming pool. We dug one out that was about 3 feet by 5 feet.
You may not have found a rock, but the clay is just like, yeah, cement.
But I mean, yeah. And that was not, I mean, we just used it as an ornament. I mean, why not? But that was, you know, that was left over from the glaciers. When they receded, they left all that junk behind.
I had heard about that underwater volcano that Kim was talking about because I read about it on One American News. So I go in and check One American News every day. And also Real America's Voice. That's another place where you can get some very conservative news, mm-hmm, as well as our CCTA in action.
Folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Again, thank you for staying with us. This is CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Stop in at East 70 Point for great deals. Drew and his knowledgeable staff have been serving the New Bern area since 1989. We always try to help our customers with friendly and honest service. Our crew is what sets us apart. Treating folks like how we want to be treated is our standard. People appreciate great service plus great prices, and that's what we're all about. Our shop is like no other. We specialize in guns, jewelry, and ammo, but we have so much more. We have the largest selection of new and used firearms, coins, collectibles, musical instruments, and tools. Our new jewelry selection is growing daily. Find us at 3317 Highway 70 East of New Bern. We're open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturday, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Also, check out our website for many, many collectibles, east70pawn.com. East 70 Pawn is your one-stop shop to buy, sell, trade, or cash loans quickly, conveniently, and confidentially.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swanspur, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Welcome back. Thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Now, where are we going to go next?
We are in the election season, so we have some observations about our local elections.
I've been real active in the party, as some people might even sense from listening to the show, the GOP party. But there's a lot of things that the general public can pay attention to. And yesterday was the first cycle of reviewing mail-in ballots. So there was 83 ballots that had been submitted. They went through a process where the two Republican, they're not judges,
the board members,
two Democrat board members, and actually the chair reviews every single ballot independently. They also go through a process if something is not readable, won't go through the scanner, but you can tell the intent of what the voter was trying to do on that ballot without just guessing. They would actually change that ballot to a new ballot that would be accepted by the scanner. And that process was done by a Republican and a Democrat team, and then checked by another Republican and Democrat team, and then it was queued up for the scanner. You had a question?
Is that like if somebody didn't fill the little block in all the way or something like that?
Yeah, well, this one happened to be there was something on the side that the scanner didn't like. It wasn't even actually part of the bubbling process.
Okay.
So, but it could be that if somebody was light with there, but it was clear, and all four people that looked at it agree what was clear. So that was good.
Before they open the envelope, are they verifying that these had been notarized or that there had been two witnesses on them? And are the witnesses' signatures verified in any way?
They definitely, when you say before they were opened, I think they have to be open to do that.
Right, because there's two envelopes. I meant before the ballot envelope is opened.
Yeah, because most of the work is not done with a ballot at all. In fact, the only time the ballot is really looked at is when they put it through the scanner. They don't look at the ballots, because there's no need to, except when the ballot won't go through the scanner, then they have to address the ballot.
How do they verify identity, being it's a photocopy? Do they type it into the system, into the database, to see that it's a verified?
During this process, there was no one keying anything into the system in front of me. But when there was questions about the status of a person, the Board of Elections director would go back to the system, which wasn't in the same room, and confirm that person's identity, and was comfortable with that. So I just, you know, there's a lot of other kind of details that go on, but the point being that, you know, there is a lot of checks and double checks. You don't have to be active in a party. This is on the Board of Elections website. They announced there's another meeting today at 3 o'clock related to the precinct judges. It's open to the public, and it's notified the public just by going to the website.
You know, an interesting thing that you mentioned there, Glenn, was that if you find a ballot that's not readable, rather than doctoring up that ballot, they went and made a substitute ballot. So they're still auditable that, okay, we had the substitute ballot, but it's a replacement for this ballot. And again, there is a chain of
And everything is secured. And I guess I'd change the terminology. I'd say that's not scannable. It is readable because individuals can, quote unquote, read it and tell what they meant. But if it won't scan for some purpose, then you keep the original, to your point.
You know, Glenn, when you point out all the checks and balances and all the stuff that they're doing, you know what that tells me? There's a potential problem with this. You got to have all these complicated checks, and everybody has to agree and all this stuff. And I really think that absentee, and we're talking about absentee ballots, not mail-in ballots. Absentee ballots, I'm not opposed to them, but they need to be more restricted, in my opinion.
You said absentee, mail-in. They're absentee, the same.
My understanding, there's only absentee ballots in North Carolina.
No. Early voting is considered absentee.
This is mail-in.
No, early voting is not absent. It's not absentee.
Yeah, it is.
It's documented as absentee in the system.
It's coded as absentee ballots.
This is mail-in voting.
Well, whatever. Well, however they're getting it. The point is, it's a process that's subject to all kinds of errors. So you got to have all these complicated ways of checking it. That's my point.
And complicated ways is confusing too.
Yeah,
that's right.
Right. And the other thing is, we're trying to encourage people, and I think CCTA does this, I think it's a good thing to do, to encourage people to vote early, okay? Not wait for Election Day, because Election Day is subject to problems. You have bad weather, you know, if you're not feeling well, or they have a problem with the...
A water pipe break.
Well, they can have problems at the polling site, like at Fairfield Harbor last time. They had problems with a couple of machines, so it slowed down everything. They had to shut some machines down. And then there's basically, early voting starts October 17th. And for people in the New Bern area, there are two early voting sites.
Five.
I'm not talking about the county. I know there's one in Vanceboro, and talking about New Bern, okay?
Okay.
New Bern has two sites. One is 406 Craven Street, which is where the Board of Election is. It's a fine place, all that. Problem is parking. Parking has been a problem there. I've worked that poll for a number of years, and they allow the employees, not only that work in that building, but the employees that work at the courthouse, they park there. Okay, that's so it's okay place, but the parking can be a problem. The second site, which I visited yesterday just to see what that looked like, is the West New Bern Recreation Center. It's on Pine Tree Road.
Drive.
West New, it's 1225 Pine Tree Drive.
Plenty of parking there.
Went by there, and I really would encourage people that they consider that. I didn't know they were going to use it this year. They've used other sites, but that looks like a site where you could be pretty well assured there'll be plenty of parking. So if I were going, I would probably prefer to go there rather than go down to 406 Craven Street. Both options, but one looks like it'd be better parking-wise.
It's accessible. It's if anybody knows where what's the I'm trying to think of the name of
the lodge.
No, the hamburger. The
cookout.
Cookout
is
if you turn
the way you
turn where cookout is off
Simmons,
of MLK. Yeah.
It's on. Don't you turn off the Simmons Street first?
No.
You go down. You go down. If you're coming, say, onto Martin Luther King, from say the east from on 70, you get off. You make a right turn, go to the second light, and make a left. That's Pine Tree Road. And it's down about, I don't know, a quarter of a mile, maybe half mile, down on the left. Like Hal said, it's easy to get to, and I'd strongly recommend
right near the there. Knights of Columbus Center.
Right down there.
So it's easy accessible.
One thing I'd like to mention is the importance of getting observers. A lot of times we don't have enough people volunteer to observe, to you know, to be sure that the procedure is done well. And it's not likely that there'll be a problem. But when I was observer one time, there was a problem. One of the machines quit working, just like you were talking about, Bob. It quit. And there were 12 people in the room. So those 12 people went ahead and voted, but they took their voting cards and put them down in a tray underneath the machine because the machine wouldn't take them. Then they left. Well, there's one man that was terribly upset by that. I mean, he was really angry that he didn't get to see his voting card go into the machine. So he wasn't sure what had happened to it. So I stayed there and watched. And when the machine started working again, I watched them feed in. And I particularly noted it while I was looking. They let me get within 3 feet of the thing, which one was that man's. And I had his phone number because I'd asked him for it before he left. I called him and told him that as an observer, I had watched his vote go into that machine, and he can rest assured that it did count.
And when they do that recovery process, mm-hmm. multiple judges mm-hmm. actually observe that, taking that overflow bin and going processing all right. each of those.
So this guy was really grateful that I'd gone to that much trouble. So I just want to emphasize that it is important to get observers there, and some people need to volunteer for it.
And there was an incident, this was a couple of years ago, where with the curbside voting. Someone who was out doing curbside voting, when they handed their ballot to the person commented on their choices. Oh. They are not allowed to do that. If someone does that to you, you report it immediately because that person does not have the right as an election worker to do that.
If people are interested in being observers, there's still opportunities to do so. And the role of the observer is to ensure free and fair elections. It is not to sit there and be the I gotcha people. They're looking for problems to call you on. They are there to make sure there's no problems.
And just being present as an observer has a bigger influence than you might think, just being there knowing mm-hmm. that there's someone paying attention to the process.
There are two other issues I think voters need to be aware of. Number one is make sure you complete the ballot completely. Go from the top to the bottom. If you support people with similar views that you have, that's very important. The second thing is on this election, there is a referendum that will change the state constitution that would require all elections in North Carolina, even municipal and county elections, that the person has to be a U.S. citizen.
Oh, great.
And that's very important. But that's down at the end. Again, it's at the end of the ballot. So if you kind of get fatigued, then don't go all the way down. You're going to miss that. So
actually, don't you have to turn it over this time?
Yes.
Well, yes, it's a two-sided ballot. Mm. Yes.
Do the whole thing.
Vote yes on the constitutional amendment. We do want you to be a citizen to vote.
Amen.
Folks, we're going to wrap this show up. And thank you for listening to us. What I want to offer also is I'm going to ask you to go out into the CC Taxpayers website. And if you bring up the website, right in the middle of the website, you'll see three little lines that'll open up a menu. And that menu, one of the items on the menu is the 2024 general election candidates. We've gotten back a number of candidates' responses. We sent out 10 actually 10 questions, or it's 6 questions and 2 specific questions. We get to see their opinion. Folks, thank you again for staying with CCTA Wake Up Call. We'll be right back.